Hi, welcome to Your Baby's Brilliant Brain. I'm Dr. Christine Anderson, or Dr. Chris, like my patients call me, and with me is...
Dr. Toxel Ruck, or just Dr. Toxel, as I like to be called.
And we are here to help you with optimizing your baby's brain development all the way from conception through the first few years of life, and this gives your baby the best start.
So we're going to finally talk about nutrition today, specifically a lot of topics that come up with babies. When do you start feeding your baby solid foods? What should you feed your baby? Of course, talking about the quality of the food that you're giving your baby in order to ensure that their brain is developing, because food is the fuel that the body, you know, it's the building blocks of the body. That's why we eat. So to actually kick off this episode, I'm going to talk a little bit about my diet and from childhood through adulthood, because as far as I know, I am one of the few vegan children of the 90s, thanks to Dr. Chris here. So what I recall from my childhood is that I wasn't vegan off the bat. I believe you were vegetarian at that point when I was born, or at least looking into becoming vegan. But I do know that I had maybe two pieces of meat in my life. I recall having chicken and not liking it. And I recall having shrimp and liking it, but haven't had shrimp since. So that's what I remember in my tiny little baby brain. But part of that is... growing up in Los Angeles in the 90s, being vegan is not like what it is today, where you have all of these amazing resources. You have the internet where you can order foods from who knows where. I do know that Dr. Chris had to pretty much make most of our meals. I think there were two vegan restaurants. Well, one was vegetarian, and then one was vegan. When I was growing up, we didn't have that wide variety of choices. So, of course, she researched everything she possibly could. She was the one in the 90s going like, no, I don't want to give my kid a bunch of sugar. You didn't play into that whole, you know, low fat thing. You were like, look, if we give our kids a balanced diet, not too much of anything in moderation, and not overpacking them with refined sugary products or products labeled as low fat. But as we know now, they compensate for that low fat by putting a bunch of sugar in it to make it taste good and momentarily provide, you know, a fullness that, you know, fat usually provides. But I actually want her to talk a little bit about, because of course I don't remember how exactly she fed me, you know, in those very early formative years. So take it away, Dr. Chris.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Toxel. Yeah, I definitely have experience with getting my children transitioning from breastfeeding to having food. And we did become vegan somewhere around the time, I believe you were around two, something like that. Yeah, but vegetarian pretty much before that. I do think you had a couple of, a little bit of chicken, but we switched to vegan soon after. So the point being is that if you want to have a certain type of diet or lifestyle, the best time to do it is when your children are young. This whole concept of there's children's food and there's adults' food is just totally leading us on this track of not only having our family come together for a meal, but also being the short order cook and really encouraging children to have very poor diets, because you're feeding into that whole thing. Well, my children are going to like this type of food. Let's just say like mac and cheese. Or, you know, pizza, but we're going to have over here some lentils and brown rice and vegetables and all these really great complex, food that's very, plant-based and trying to get as low on the totem pole when it comes to the food chain as possible. So you set them up so that they're not going to be eating the things that you eventually want them to eat. So I would say right out of the gate, try to make it be as close to what you're eating in your family as possible. And yes, you might have to maybe not add so much spice to it, or you might have to simplify it a little bit and break it down. But in general, I never succumb to this, you know, my children eat one thing and I eat another. And people would be absolutely enthralled that my children were eating salad and vegetables. And oh my gosh, I can't believe that. And I'm like, well, this is all that they know. So we're teaching our children. I always say parents are like the first, I don't want to say drug, but pushers of things that possibly could lead to addictive qualities like sugar and artificial flavors, processed and colors, foods. Processed food. So children won't know about these things, especially initially when they're around the time they start eating, whether that's 6 months, a year, or beyond. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But how are they supposed to know about soda, really? Or cakes or cookies or candy? They don't. It's usually an adult that's giving them these things first off, and then they, of course, want them, right? We gravitate to sweet things. Breast milk is very sweet for a reason. It gets us so that we're surviving and we want to have our babies breastfeeding, but then beyond that, we want to get them used to having things that are maybe a little bit more savory. So when my children first started eating, it basically was me cooking veggies, pureeing them. I'd pop them into little ice cube trays, freeze it, bag them up, of course, in BPA, or now there's other containers out there you can safely use. And then I'd have my basic food to go. So I didn't need to buy processed baby food. Which, if you have to in a pinch, is fine, but on a regular basis, number one, it's costly, and number two, maybe they're adding some things you don't want, like salt. It's also heated and treated because, of course, for safety purposes. So I tried to do this as fresh as possible with organic food that I'm buying, and then making up, I would do like lentils and chickpeas, and then I'd mix it together with maybe some brown rice or quinoa once they started eating on a regular basis. And we'll go into how to get that process going, because you want to do it in a systematic manner once you start giving food. But that's kind of the basics of it. Anything to add to that, Dr. Thompson?
Well, and I also want to add, as growing up, it wasn't like, oh, you're just getting veggies and bland food. Here's the thing with introducing your children to vegetables that I see a lot. There are ways to make vegetables taste good. If you just boil spinach or boil a bunch of peas, and I'm talking like later childhood, that's not so bad for like a baby learning to, try new foods. But I mean, would you eat a pile of boiled peas? Like unseasoned or a pile of spinach? Like, no, you wouldn't want to eat that.
Why I've had to, because of situations where there was nothing else to eat,
nobody wants to eat that, let alone like your 6-year-old, so building those good habits. So part of the reason that, vegan diets are so great is there are so many ways now that you can make vegetables tasty. And that's what my mom did growing up. It wasn't like the salads were delicious, and I didn't even hear of iceberg lettuce until like middle school. And I was like, what is that on your like school lunch? And they're like, it's lettuce. I'm like, that's not lettuce.
Well, that's what I grew up with, by the way. We only had iceberg lettuce.
So
there you go.
So you're also, the other thing I did want to mention is talking about these nutrient dense foods. And I know that there's this idea of like, look, as long as my kid's not hungry, not complaining, I've fed them. There's a difference between actually starving of food and then nutritionally starving your children. So you're giving them food with no nutrients, where it's like it will fill their stomach, yes. But in the long run, it's nutritionally starving the body. And then that leads to health problems, including issues with the brain down the line. So I can't emphasize enough. And the thing is, people know that fast food isn't the greatest nutrient source. Everybody knows it. But it's easy. It's convenient. You don't have to do anything. You don't even have to get out of your car. But at what cost? At what cost is that doing to your body and your child's body in the long run? So what do we trade for? We'll talk more about that too, but that is something I wanted
there's
to
so much
up.
To talk about so nutrition, but yeah. I think let's kind of dial it back a little bit to some of these food introduction strategies.
Well, and that's what I mean with the food introduction. Some of these children's food introduction is chicken nuggets.
Right. So, so let's, first of all, let's talk a little bit about the age to introduce food, because there's a lot of controversy about this. And we'll talk more about things like sleeping, because some people think if I start to feed my child earlier, then their belly's going to be fuller, then they're going to sleep through the night. So there's no really great guidelines except for one that I have. Do you know what that is?
You mean for the age that children start eating?
Right.
When they cut their first tooth is what I've heard.
Yeah.
When you actually see
You probably heard that from me.
Yeah.
So do you know why?
Because that's a sign that the digestive enzymes in the stomach, you need those in order to properly digest solid food. So that tooth cutting is nature's way of letting you know that baby now has those digestive enzymes their stomach can handle. Their digestive system can handle the solid food that you're putting into it.
You, Dr. Toxel, you're so right. You're so brilliant. Right, because babies come into this world with a very immature digestive tract. So if you start giving them foods too early, they may not be able to break down their food into smaller pieces for absorption into the digestive tract. That can be irritating and that can create problems either immediately or down the line with things like sensitivities. So this is basically a guideline that I like to follow. And look, it's a guideline, all right? Every child is different. I was trying to think, I can't remember exactly when you started eating, but my third one didn't want to have any solid food until he was about 15 months. So he just was not interested. We would offer it and he'd be like, no, I'm not going to eat that. And so he was exclusively breastfed for 15 months. And then when he started eating, he didn't stop. So, you know, there's going to be a range of when this happens. And then I think my second one cut his first tooth pretty late as well. That was probably around 8 or 9 months. And I can't remember when Dr. Toxel, but I swear with her, she like read the book and went, okay, this is what is supposed to happen. So you probably cut your first tooth, you know, generally around 6 months or so. But this is really, that's one way. And then also the other way too, they talk about is looking to see how a child might be reaching for their food. So if they reach for it with a closed fist, then that might be a sign, again, that they're not ready just developmentally because the nervous system hasn't developed adequately for that stage of controlling what goes on with digestion. Do you have anything to add on that?
No, not so far. I said, like, working again and... of course, everybody's different. This doesn't mean you have to stop breastfeeding your baby as soon as food is introduced.
No, there's a process.
Yeah, there's a process.
Definitely
there's
process.
This whole process that we're going to go through and go over to make sure that your baby does have that nutritional capability to really, because I said it's just rapid growth from there.
Right. And we'll probably talk about weaning in another episode just so this doesn't get way too long.
Right.
Do you want to talk about some of the foods to start with? Or should I start
with
that?
No, I think you should start because I think you've been talking about this to parents for a really, really long time. I think like you've got this. And of course, you're a mom too. I'm not a mom yet. You've gone through this
whole
thing.
That's all right.
So.
It's possibly going to be different for everybody, but in general, I like to start foods that are low on the allergenic scale first, just because they will tend to be more inflammatory if there's a problem. So that means holding off on things like dairy and wheat, eggs, peanuts, soy, corn, citrus, white potato, sugar, chocolate, cocoa, meats, and tomatoes. You might even want to, especially if you have sensitivities yourself as a parent, let's just say you don't do well with a certain food, you might also want to back off on that particular food. And then there's certain ethnic groups that don't do well with certain things. For instance, Asian people often have a very hard time with digesting things like dairy. So again, these are general guidelines. And if you ever have any questions about it, definitely working with somebody who can help you out specifically will help. But I would suggest waiting on at least a year, preferably even longer, maybe even up to 3 years, depending on what you're seeing in your child. If they're handling food fine, then you can try it out. And the best way to figure out if a food is creating a problem is to give a little bit and wait a few days, because there might be a delayed reaction that is more of a sensitivity nature in the range. It's not a true allergy, which is an IgE mediated response. It's more an IgG response, where it's delayed and can be even delayed like up to a week. But 4 days is probably a good, reasonable time to look and see if you have any rashes, digestive issues, respiratory issues, things
change
like that.
Change in the mood.
Yeah, change in the mood.
More sleepy or
agitated.
Or agitated.
Yeah, sure. So that's just a general guideline. And, you know, again, everybody's going to be different, but starting off with vegetables, I think, is the best way to go.
And here's the thing. I agree. When you actually look at, if you ever look at what nutrients are in what foods, vegetables have so many nutrients. I mean, people think of them, I mean, it's insane, because I've been delving into this more myself and just looking at how many different vitamins, how many different minerals. You've got good fats, you do have sugars in vegetables, but, you know, in a very low glycemic way. So you get so much, and certain vegetables definitely have more than others. But I feel that, and Dr. Chris is about to go into how you introduce vegetables. I mean, you don't hear so much about people being allergic or sensitive to vegetables, unless it's something like onion or cruciferous. Broccoli is one, Brussels sprouts another, but for the most part, a pretty safe food group to introduce.
Right. I mean, you've got to start somewhere. And the other aspect too, is that if you start with foods that are too sweet, again, we naturally gravitate towards sweet things. So if you start out with a really sweet, guess what? You're going to give a vegetable that maybe is not so sweet. And the child's going to be like, no, I want that sweet thing. So this is, if you want to do some of the sweeter, root vegetables or the squashes to complement maybe the green beans or the avocado or something like that, fine. But, you know, keep it sweet vegetables versus starting with fruit, because a lot of parents want to start with fruit. And I'm like, yes, you can in a bit. Let's get them set up on some of the veggies first.
And of course, these are all softened. You're not just giving vegetables to them straight off, like the way that we eat them.
No, because they're just getting their teeth. So you do have to cook and puree. Mm-hmm. As they get a little bit more, if they've got some teeth, little tooth here and there, you can cook a carrot. Slice it so that it's more like a stick, but cook it so it's soft, so that they can start to pick it off up off their tray and start to eat it that way. Or you can cut like avocado in slices and again, have them go to pick it up and eat with their hands, because this is going to also develop their fine motor control, their hand-eye coordination. Or like put little peas on their plates and then they can pick them up individually. So that is as they start to be able to digest their food, maybe a little bit more around, 9 months or so, because otherwise they're not going to be able to chew it effectively. And then there's going to be all this undigested food in their system. So, yeah.
And so why should they avoid spinach, beets, and turnips until 9 months?
Well, there's in them something called an oxalate. So this can disrupt calcium absorption. So you want to just make sure that it's appropriate. And that even then, again, you don't want to serve spinach all the time. So you want to vary what you're feeding them. So once again, their system won't be overloaded with one type of food. Even if they have a favorite, try not to give it to them every single day. Try to rotate on like a every 4 day basis once they start to have a repertoire of food.
Right. And so those were the vegetables. Can any fruits be introduced at that time? Or should they be introduced a little later?
I would say some of the stone fruits, like apple, that's not a stone fruit, like plums and peaches and pears and apricots. And then apples are good. Maybe some melon later on. That tends to be a little bit higher in sugar. But those are all possibilities, right?
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, and another thing too. So when babies start actually chewing, the picking up and chewing, it's not only developing their nervous system, the act of chewing itself actually triggers a chain reaction down the digestive system. So the body is learning to digest these more complex foods better. Chewing actually activates saliva, which has enzymes in it that help break down food. This also triggers certain enzymes further down, actually triggers your stomach enzymes that will digest proteins and fats as well to start getting ready, because that chewing is the signal that food is coming. Better get these, little enzymes and certain hormones ready because it's coming. So it's that further development of not just the nervous system, but the entire digestive system, which then is connected to your immune system. So it all works together.
Which is why people should not inhale their food.
Yeah, exactly.
And this goes for everybody. And then, of course, you want to make sure that, and if you do end up giving your baby any meat products, again, I would make sure they're completely, well, even the fruits and vegetables, you want to make sure they're organic. Even if they're organic, I wash them in a mixture of baking soda and a veggie wash, because this is going to help take off any residues that might be, who knows who was handling it, any possibly parasites, bacteria, that type of thing off of the produce. And also, if you're buying it commercially, you want to make sure all this stuff is organic, because your babies will concentrate those pesticides in their tissues way more than you will. And this can disrupt their hormone system. It can disrupt their immune system, neurologic system, everything. So for sure, you want to make sure that you're giving them as clean food as possible. And remember, because of this process, in the beginning, you don't have to worry so much about, are they getting all the nutrients? Because they're still going to be breastfeeding. They're still going to be getting their formula if that's what they're having. So you don't have to be so concerned about that. You want to expose them to different textures, to different colors. You want it to be this experience that they're having, because this is also what's setting them up for success later, so that they don't have issues with things like texture and color and pieces. And I mean, all the stuff that I've seen in my practice where kids get so picky if it's not a white or beige colored item and there's a little speck of something in their food and then they won't eat it, or it's not presented in a certain way. So it's important in that beginning part to expose them to as many situations as possible in the sensory realm.
One thing I do want to bring up too, and this is something that I learned in a seminar recently, is more and more families, you know, it used to be the thing where you ate breakfast together, you ate dinner together as a family, no screens on, no phones. And they're talking about this whole disconnect where people are just inhaling their food, not really tasting it. They've got something else to concentrate on. So the thing with screens during what is supposed to be, you know, a very intrinsic family process can disrupt the way that we eat. We're not chewing our food as thoroughly as we're supposed to be doing. They recommend 40 chews per bite of food, which I know seems like a lot, but when you think about if you have time to really sit down and eat, you have time for those 40 chews. You're often talking with each other, so you're not inhaling because it's rude to talk with your mouth full. So you're eating slower, you're making it more of an intimate, you know, experience rather than just, okay, wolf down whatever it is. We've got to have something on, something playing, something distracting. And it really removes people from that really quite good relationship. I mean, we used to eat dinner as a family all the time. And there's a family includes bringing that baby into the fold as well and getting that experience with their food. So I just wanted to point that out. As long as we're talking about neurological development, not having that distraction.
You are absolutely right. And not only not the distraction, but a lot of times, as you were talking about with that disconnect, that child isn't even really knowing what he or she is putting in their mouth because they're focused on what's on the screen. And so they're putting the food in and not having that total experience. And again, that sets up these issues with disconnect, either with being a picky eater, not wanting to eat, texture issues, or even later on down the line as that child grows, where they're eating subconsciously and they can't get that trigger of being full because they're not really getting that connect with the brain of the signal, like you're eating and you're full and you should stop eating. And I think this is definitely an aspect of what happens later on with things like being overweight and obesity. Yeah,
exactly.
And then at about 10 months, you might want to add a little bit more foods that have some more protein in them, like maybe an almond butter or sesame seed butter, if you're not seeing any problems with that. Or lentils, chickpeas, quinoa, amaranth, millet. Other beans can be added after a year. And also, if children are going to be eating animal products like meat, to add also start adding those after about a year.
Right. And so any protein related, again, with the nuts and seeds, you really do want to alternate those protein heavy foods because we can develop sensitivities very easily to a protein if we're overexposed to it. So I've recommended not having cashews except for like once a week. Those can be very highly inflammatory for some people. Almonds in the same way, one time a week at first. And I know being vegan, that is very, very difficult.
Especially when you love nuts.
Yes.
I know I have a hard time, but I do try to like hold myself back.
Yeah. And so just keeping that in mind, especially it's very frustrating when you're older, when you do build up a sensitivity to something. And again, this is more from being vegan. If you're sensitive to a nut, that takes away like a good portion of foods that you're able to eat. So setting up these good dietary practices early in life sets them up for an easier time eating versus having all of these restrictions on your diet. Then eating doesn't become fun. It just becomes a pain. It becomes very frustrating for some people, especially going out to eat. They don't have this good relationship with food when food should be something that we have a positive relationship because we are what we eat. That cliche can't be said enough. It is so, so true. Every cell in our body depends on what food we eat, what we put into it.
So as your child starts to get more and more where they're eating food and less of the breast milk or the formula, you then also need to look at sources of iron. And that can be done really easily. It doesn't have to be done with me, as people think, but you can get iron-rich foods that are basically anything leafy green. Prune juice is really good. And add a source of vitamin C along with the iron-rich food. That helps with the absorption. And beans are also a good source of iron. Blackstrap molasses, and then cooking in a cast iron skillet is really good. So you want to make sure you do that. And then you also want to make sure that your child has a source of omega fats. So for children that are having animal, they can do fish, but you want to do very small fish like sardines, because the larger fish...
Sardines just sounds gross. The word itself.
Well, yeah, I'm
sure they taste good. Otherwise, people wouldn't eat them.
I don't know. I don't think I ever had one. Mm. But as you get higher up on the animal chain, the more the toxins will concentrate. And with what we're putting into our oceans, this is going to be hormone-disrupting chemicals, neurotoxins, and really so not good for us. So with iron sources, you can get everything you need from the plant kingdom in that regard. But with the omega fats, you may have to turn to a supplement that is made from algae if you're not consuming fish or if your child is not consuming fish. And now, thank goodness, they have ones out on the market that are better tasting and are liquid. They actually don't really taste too fishy, which is really good. But that for sure needs to happen because these are the building blocks for the brain. So as I said to my children, I'm like, we don't eat fish. But you either need to eat fish or you need to take a supplement because there's no other way really for vegans to get the DHA into their world. There is a little bit of a conversion from things like walnuts and chia and hemp.
And flax. It's very minimal.
Yeah, it's not perfect. And there are cofactors that can be affected by even things like stress or aspirin and that type of thing. But the bottom line is make sure you are getting those essential fats and decreasing something called omega-6s, which is coming in all those processed foods with the vegetable oils, guys. Anytime you see a vegetable oil or canola oil, that is going to ramp up the omega-6s. You're going to get your omega-3s to omega-6s out of balance. That's going to create inflammation. And this is where we start having this cascade of issues that go on and on and on.
Inflammatory issues.
Yeah. So inflammatory issues, gut, brain. I mean, we're talking everything. The body is like on fire.
Right. And so just to say something about the state of our food in general, if you can make this yourself, if you have time to make this yourself, please do so. There are so many times I've gone looking for very simple ingredients that I know shouldn't have a paragraph for me to read through, and finding that they've added sugar to something that didn't need to be sugar added to it. This could include the baby food. I actually haven't looked what the current status of baby food is. I know you're a bit more in tune with that, but yeah, you don't need to add salt. You don't need to have all of these additives. You really just want your baby to have that pure connection to the actual food itself.
I know there's a lot more options now with baby food. And I think in that regard, it's much better. I think now some of them even come frozen so that they haven't been pasteurized. Or there's some delivery services that try to do it fresh. I mean, there's so many more options if you can't do it yourself. That's for sure.
And I do want to say the one positive thing, and again, I know times are changing and it might not be viable, but having a parent cooking in that kitchen, us seeing them in the high chair cooking that food, again, establishing that relationship with it. Neurologically, it does something where it's, you know, taking that close relationship with whatever parent is cooking in the kitchen, them slowly starting to involve you in, mm-hmm. as you become an older child, involving you again sets up those building blocks for kids not being so reliant on these processed foods, on going out to eat, on making sure that that good foundation that you set up for them stays intact, whether, you know, there's a whole joke about going to college and surviving off a diet of ramen. And you don't have to do, you don't have to grow up thinking like that. If you have that good relationship, if you know that there can be some fun in cooking and some benefit to actually cooking your own food. And you really do get that when you involve your children at an appropriate age in the kitchen with you.
Well, and it can start early. It really can. Or even asking a child, do you want, you know, carrots or squash? And mm-hmm. they understand at an early age. They can point to it or try to start talking. This is, I think, you know, you've hit the nail on the head with this all-inclusive aspect. It's not just the food we're putting into our mouths. It is this whole experience of what food means to us as humans, really. All right, I have one last thing to say. And this is about sugar, because diabetes is an epidemic in this country, right? And if you have diabetes, you are going to be overweight. The two go together in general. So this whole thing of giving our young children sugar, it is so not necessary. Really try to find ways, as you have to be creative. Now, again, there's so many other things out there with having the internet that I did not have at my disposal about making, you know, treats that are not filled with sugar, but maybe instead you're using apples or carrots or raisins and you're using fruit to sweeten naturally. And yeah, it's not going to be as sweet as what you eat with sugar, but you're going to train your child's palate. And if you start out with these sweeter treats in the fruit kingdom, then they are not going to be the ones that are craving all the super bad processed sweet treats. And you are going to set up their whole system so that this is not something that occurs later on. And I'm seeing it's incredible. It's a global epidemic of children all over the world being obese. It is a serious, serious problem. And this starts with how we're introducing food. So you don't want to give them a glass of fruit juice, right? We were like, oh, it's full of vitamins, you know, pull it out of the fridge and pour them a big glass of apple juice or grape juice or something like that. No, it is full of sugar and it has nothing to put the brakes on it. If you gave that child the equivalent in an apple or grapes, they would not be able to eat the whole thing. I mean, that is a lot of concentrated food going into that. Besides the fact that apple juice, that's full of pesticides if it's not organic and whatnot. Same thing with grapes. So you have to be very careful because those juices are going to concentrate whatever pesticide is in there. Because remember, it's how many apples or how many oranges. So if you want to, you can do water, maybe with a little splash of organic apple juice that you have processed yourself at home. So it still has some of the fiber in there. And it still has the nutrients that have not been pasteurized out of the juice. That's the best thing if you want to give like a little bit of flavor, or you can also use food grade, organic, beyond organic essential oils that are marketed for internal use, a little toothpick full in their water. If they want a little bit of a flavor without any sweetener added at all is another thing that you can do that also have therapeutic benefits. But yeah, keeping these things away from your child as long as possible, or making it an occasional thing. Like, don't have it in your home. Don't have these snacks in your home full of sugar and salt and trans fats. Just don't have them there. Either make it when you want it, or as a treat, you go to the store and you get the healthier, as healthy version. I'm not adverse to treats, but let's make it a treat and not an everyday occurrence.
Well, and I just want to say too, because you have control at a certain point, don't let other people infringe on that. If this is something that you're really passionate about doing for your kid and you have all these people coming from outside going like, oh, it's not a big deal, like to give them just a little bit. If these, you're their parent, you're their parents. It is, they're your kid. And what goes into their body is, you know, your ultimate say. So whether it's grandma, grandpa, friend of the family that's babysitting them, I mean, really let people know if this is something that you're super passionate about, that this is really important, that they not go around what you have, you know, set up for your kid nutritionally, because I hear stories about that all the time. Oh, I gave them, you know, a Reese's peanut butter cup and it calmed them down. You're like, oh my God, why would you, like, why would you do that? So I just, well, you know, wanted to give a little support to parents going, yeah, like, this is something where if you truly feel that this is the right course and you really want them to be nutritionally sound and have a good foundation with food, sometimes you just got to put your foot down. Sometimes you've got to be that person. And if that other person that you have to, you know, talk to about that decides that they don't want to adhere to that, then don't have them around your kid.
Well, yeah, I mean, that does bring up a good point of garnering that support. And it also goes to the aspect of your child sitting there being the only one without a so-called treat. Mm. Doesn't have to be that way. There are so many things out there now that you can get that are healthier choices. And I would make up like a batch of muffins and put them in the freezer. And then if you guys had a party, you know, you pick a muffin or something, or we'd stop and pick up a healthier sort of vegan cupcake or something, and bring food. So I'd always prepared with supplies. And then when you would go to your grandmother's house, then she was on board with what I was doing. And if you don't have a grandparent or somebody who's close in the family on board, it's going to be difficult, but you could give them a list of like approved treats if they say wanted to give a treat and go, okay, here's some brands that are better choices, or, you know, send them with something so that grandma can give them a cookie. I mean, or a recipe that grandma can make with them so that it doesn't have to be this exclusion thing of you can't do it at all. You just want it to be most of the time you have a very clean diet full of vegetables, full of dense nutrition, and have it be that occasional, really, it is a treat that a child is like, wow, I never get to have this, or very rarely, that this is super special. And that's how it should be. And that way it makes it an actual treat. Yeah. Any other words? I mean, do you feel deprived at all growing up as you did?
No. You always, if you knew that there was going to be like a birthday event at school, you would make a treat for me on Halloween. So on Halloween, I still went trick-or-treating. I still collected the candy. Just, you know, I didn't keep it at the end. She would always have some other treat for me at the end, going like, okay, here's what, you know, after the trick-or-treating. So give me all your, you know,
I trained
all your
you.
Toxic candy.
Yeah, I trained you early. So it was never like a thing. It was just like, yeah, I know at the end of trick-or-treating, I'm going to hand over my candy and I'm going to get something, you know, it'd be various things.
And, you know, we would have like nights where I'd have like a little ice cream, you know, kind of, it wasn't just restricted to holidays or birthdays or anything like that. Like there were occasions. So no, I don't feel deprived. And even back then when there definitely wasn't as much as there is now in terms of vegan options and ice cream options, I didn't feel deprived back then. I actually find that sweet things, I can't do sweet things now. I've tried things. I'm like, this physically hurts my teeth kind of thing. So I'd say that good foundation has stayed intact.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more, even because here's the thing again, this is setting your child up for the future, not just through their childhood, but beyond. And now with having an adult children and even my son who has moved away to New Zealand, and I see the choices he's making and he's coming back to his foundation. It really just comes around. He's making it his own. He's discovering it for himself, but it all goes back to how he was raised.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
No. I like to say, if you liked this podcast episode, please share it with your friends, moms, parents, anybody,
grandparents,
anybody you feel that this would be helpful to, or who have really been seeking out this information. Please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And please rate, listen to us on Spotify.
And if you need help, reach out to us.
Yes.
Because we'll put that info in there as well. All right. Thank you. And until next time,
grow up healthy.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Bye.